Well, now in our series Profit with Purpose, finding innovative ways to finance the many social and environmental problems we face. This new global trend of impact investing is inviting investors to profit from the solutions to these problems, and there are some big dollars flocking to it. JP Morgan Research suggests that impact investors are putting $9 billion US dollars into impact projects in 2013 alone, and the majority of them are expecting market rate returns. In Australia, super funds are investigating how they might find their way into the sector, and today we'll hear how one such fund, Christian Super, is really making headway. But first, producer Rebecca Gorman looks at the new and very individual social benefit bonds that are channeling private money into fixing niche social problems. This first Australian bond, being piloted in New South Wales, has the money raised supporting Uniting Care Burnside's new PIN program, and that helps parents like Mick and Daniel rebuild their lives.
Hello. Good boy.
What are you having?
He's having banana custard. Yeah. Yum.
Well, the situation was pretty dismal. Both my kids were taken from me on the 12th of December 2008. It was all through drugs and things like that. I cleaned up my act a fair bit leading up to them being taken, but the mother of the children wouldn't. She had a bad problem with pills and everything else. And that was the last straw for Docs. I took the kids and I came here.
Oh, we'll get it all over your face, won't we?
Well, before I found Nupin, I was in an overwhelming situation. My daughter had been removed and placed in foster care, and the caseworkers working for the department were of the opinion that I wasn't going to achieve restoration.
Nupin graduates Mick and Daniel, who now return to the Father's Centre as volunteers. The program has been so successful, the majority of parents who go through it manage to bring their children home.
Everything's cheery now. There's a lot of hard work, but yeah.
Well, tell me about that hard work.
I was smoking pot and things like that. That all had to stop. Just growing up, just being a sensible, normal person instead of worrying about myself and my problems. I had two little boys that needed, you know, special attention and care, and really turning that onto them sort of thing, and just giving them everything that I had.
It was a very open and trusting environment. It was a safe environment. I don't think I could have spoken about where I was at the time or the situation I was facing as freely in any other environment.
Despite the program's success, two of their centres were about to close. Such was the pressure on finances. Then came the idea of applying to receive money through a new scheme, a social benefit bond. Here's how it works. As an investor, I buy a bond. That money gets used to fund the Nupin program. Then, after 7 years, if the program meets its target of restoring children in foster care to their parents, the government pays me back my bond money plus, in this case, 12% interest. It pays me out of the money it will save by the child not needing to be in care. Liz Sanders is the operations and practice manager for Nupin. She says the process of getting investment ready, as it's called, wasn't easy.
Well, look, it's true. I mean, we had never collected data or information in the way that we have to do it now. That was one of the changes to the service, that we've had to be a lot more prescriptive around what we measure, but also what assessment tool, for instance. We've introduced the North Carolina Family Assessment Scale with each family, because that gives us an evaluated tool that helps us show the changes that people are making. But I think we'll be much, much better, because we will be able to set goals with families much easier, and we'll be able to show the outcomes that are happening and show why things are getting better for the family, or in what way things are getting better for the family. You know, but that's been hard work for the staff. We've put in all sorts of new systems. We've got a new electronic data collection system. And so, you know, staff have really had enormous changes the last few months.
How have they responded to that? Because I would imagine a lot of them are saying things like, well, this takes us away from the core work that we're good at.
Yes, look, I won't pretend that it's been easy, but they've really risen to the challenge. They've known how important it was. They knew that we would have lost two centres if it hadn't been for this funding. And every staff member we have is absolutely dedicated to improving the lives of children and families. I suppose the biggest loss for them, in a way, is that we've had to narrow our target group. So we've had to turn away families we would have worked with before. But having said that, we're now working with more families who absolutely desperately need this as a service.
Here in the New Pin toilet, the fathers are invited to write a little message on the wall. So it's covered in black texter and some fantastic little sayings. Life is a hill, the climb is hard, as they would know here, but the view is worth it at the top. That's from Robert. And thank you, New Pin, for our lives back as dads. That's from Stephen, 2013. And then this little poem. When I lost my children, I thought I lost my heart, but now I found a new pin for my chest and I got a brand new start. From John. And one right at the top there, I will survive. It's definitely an inspiring place to go to the toilet.
So the social benefit bond is clearly a clever idea. There's a second underway in New South Wales, and it's taking off around the world. In the UK, they have 14 either on the go or planned, with at least five states in the US also working on the idea. Even so, there's scepticism about a bond's capacity to make change on a broad scale. Peter Winicky, the head of philanthropic services at the Meyer Family Company, wonders if we're asking too much of these impact investment ideas.
Yeah, look, I think it's a terrific discussion. It's been going on for several years now. To date, there's been more talk than action, but the talk is needed. As we know, governments are fiscally constrained. We have pressing issues in our community that governments alone can't address. They don't have the resources, they don't have the skills. And also, there are various projects that they shouldn't be taking risks with taxpayer money. So we need to tap into new pools of capital, and I think impact investing can be another pool of capital that we can dip into.
What are your frustrations around that industry?
Well, it's new in Australia. There are very few products that we can take to clients, and I think, and don't take this the wrong way, I'm really excited about it. I hope they're all successful. I think there's been a lot of hype to date. Take social investment bonds. I mean, some of the hype is they're going to change the world. I mean, at the moment, there are very few such products in the world, let alone Australia. So I'm all for these products. I mean, as I said earlier, governments around the world are becoming more and more fiscally constrained. We need to find other avenues in terms of pools of capital to address the issues that we face in the community. So I'm hopeful that they will be a great success, but it's frankly, it's just too early to tell.
The Meyer Family Company's Peter Winicky. The other area that the impact investment community is targeting is our superannuation savings pool. As you can imagine, directing the billions of dollars in world savings towards fixing the globe's ills is an attractive idea. But is it realistic to think that the rules around the investment of our superannuation could accommodate the idea of blending profits with do-gooding?
Loving us more than we know, Jesus, you live in our hearts.
In Australia, there are few super funds who have acted in this area. The most prominent is Christian Super, a relatively small player, but making a name for itself through its impact investments. The CEO is Peter Murphy, and his impact investment specialist is Simba Maraketa.
I think when we consider impact investing, we're thinking in the terms of, one, it's got to make a good financial return, and the second thing is it's got to make a difference in society and how it can positively impact society. Within the ethical investing space, the first generation was really people screening out stuff, so being defined about what we don't do and what we don't invest in, whereas impact investing now is being defined about what we do and how we can help society.
And so what kind of investments are you in?
So we're in renewable energy, community finance, sustainable agriculture, microfinance, microinsurance, community infrastructure. I think that's it. Simba, any others?
Yeah, we also just invested in a private equity fund that focuses on social enterprises. So it's not necessarily in one sector, but across the sectors.
Has it been at all complex, the process of getting Christian Super to make these kind of investments? Did you have to convince anyone that it was a good idea?
I think in terms of our trustees, we had to do hard, diligent and strong due diligence on the investments, but we've got to do that for any investment that we go into. So it wasn't that hard for us as a fund. Maybe that's one of the benefits of being a smaller super fund, is that the size of the transactions were in our sweet spot, that we could actually apply the resources to look at that. Maybe for some of the other larger super funds, because the impact investing space is a bit small, that for them to apply the resources for the size of investments that we're making, it's not worth their while of doing that.
Simba, as an African man from Zimbabwe, how do you feel about this idea of impact investment having a big difference or making a big difference to the inequities that the globe faces?
I think in general, I think it's a positive thing on a number of, perspectives. The first one was that usually the transfer of capital between the first world and the third world was mostly through foreign aid and grants. Now the flow of capital is not just from a government to another government who then decides who to give the money to. It's from an individual who's using their superannuation funds to invest in another individual to change their lives.
But also bringing it closer to home, you talk about, you know, a revolutionary aspect is one of the funds that we've invested in, which is Foresters Community Finance. We co-invested with the government in that. And that government co-investment changed the risk profile for us to make it attractive for us to invest in that. By the government using their balance sheet, as it were, to co-invest with us, it actually meant that we were able to invest in something that has an effect in multiple NGOs. So that's another way in which impact investing in combination with the government can actually be revolutionary.
When Radio National has done stories in this area before, there have been some comments from listeners that, well, isn't that typical? So the capitalists get a second bite at it. Already they get mostly everything, and here they are, even in the development phase, they're going to get a financial return. It's just not right to be combining these two things. Philanthropy should be a gift. You shouldn't be expecting any kind of return. What do you think about that idea?
I think when you have a look at the Australian philanthropic scene, that we're giving about 2% of GDP to philanthropy, that the pie is not that big. It's not as big as it is in, say, for instance, the US or in other places. So if philanthropy is not going to do it and super funds are capable of doing it by investing for the benefit of their members, then isn't that a good thing?
Peter Murphy and Simba Maraketta from Christian Super. This is RN. I'm Rebecca Gorman, discussing impact investing, the idea of using private investments to help government and charity improve the state of the world. As we've been hearing, there are inroads being made to shift big dollars into this field, but not as yet the kind of money that the Global Impact Investment Network in the US is imagining. It acknowledges there are still many barriers in the way, like confusion about terminology, a refusal in some areas to share knowledge or co-invest, and the absence of common tools to measure outcomes. In Australia, there's a small and enthusiastic community working away on these issues, but many are circumspect about the rate of change. Christopher Thorne has been nudging it along for more than a decade. He set up JB Weir's philanthropic services team and was a contributor to the Labor Government Senate inquiry into freeing up access between the social sector and capital markets. He's now at investment firm Evans & Partners.
It'd be nice to say that the whole market will be ready at a particular time, I don't think it will be like that. I think there'll be particular institutions that could be ready quite quickly. I'm of the view that within the next 2 to 3 years, it's not unrealistic to expect that a major not-for-profit may not list on the public market a debt instrument or an equity instrument. I think it's possible, it's foreseeable, I think it's doable, but is that something that the whole sector could tap into? Absolutely not. I'm very clear that we can't paint the whole sector with the same brush. There are some very clear risks in this area. If you've got people involved who really don't understand the not-for-profit sector, debt is a dangerous thing. I'm, for one, very averse to this idea that you just go borrow money and you'll actually achieve your social purpose. This is not about debt funding the growth of the social sector. It's about attracting appropriate finance from informed investors who understand risk and return to fund particular programs where it's been thought through, there's an appropriate business plan, if you like, around how that capital is going to be used, what return is going to be generated, what risk is going to be taken to generate that return, and at the end of the day, is that an appropriate investment to be made? And that's where you need intermediaries who are not just commercial, but actually understand where the not-for-profit's coming so they can actually give them sound advice on whether they should be doing it or not. And, in this sector, unfortunately, often there's this excitement for the new idea, the silver bullet. I don't think this is it per se. I think it's one of an increasing array of tools that are available for those who are trying to finance this type of activity.
So there's a long way to go before we see an easy flow of private investment into areas that have formerly been only government or philanthropic domains. Superannuation money is sniffing the air, and social benefit bonds are scratching some of the hard-to-get spots of social disadvantage. But back at Newpin, fathers don't really mind where the money comes from.
What do you love about having your kids back?
Just watching them grow and how they love me and I love them, and it's just great. I just love it. I just wish things would stand still as they are, you know, so they never grow up and stay this age. It's great.
Well, my situation now is wonderful, is ideal. My daughter is living at home with me, going to school. She's happy, well-adjusted. She's always smarter than what I expect her to be, and she wants to know everything. And it feels good to be the person that she asks.
Fathers Daniel and Mick from Uniting Care Burnside's New PIN program, ending that report from Rebecca Gorman and sound engineer Judy Rapley. If you'd like to catch up on earlier episodes or check some of the many resources we've gathered, I do invite you to go to the Saturday Extra webpage. And it's interesting to note that the other big philanthropic investment made yesterday, you might have seen by Greg Poach and his wife Kay, who've given $10 million to the University of Western Australia, who are really in the receipt of quite a lot of money lately, to create a Centre for Indigenous Health in that state. They also fund centres at the University of Sydney and Flinders University in Adelaide, and I think I read yesterday they're going to fund two more. So there are some really exciting developments in this space, which I think is terrific for Australia. Next week in Profit with Purpose, we'll meet a range of investors trying to do things differently when it comes to philanthropy. So we'll have a range sitting with me in the studio.